David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hello, everybody, and this is The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi. And today I'm so excited because we have an amazing guest today. It is Mark Daugherty, and he is an amazing gentleman. He is an author, and he has really gone through an incredible journey in life, and he has a lot to share through his experiences and how he's overcome a lot of the things he went through. And today he's here to share his story. And I'm honored to have you on the show, Mark. Thank you so much for coming. And can you tell everybody a little about yourself and what you do?
Sure. First of all, thanks for having me, Stacey. As you pointed out, my name is Mark Daugherty. I'm 67 years old. I was able to retire at 61, fortunately. As I put in my book, I've written two books. My first one was called Reset. And it was basically as a kid growing up, fearing my father, having my first panic attack when I was 19 years old and really didn't know what was happening to me. You know, I was in the Air Force at the time. I was a young guy. I was unsophisticated. I actually thought I was going crazy. And over the years, as my anxiety got worse, fortunately, I was able to swallow my pride and decided to go into therapy, which helped me a lot. But at the end, I couldn't quite beat it. And for those people who suffer from fear and anxiety, at least for me, it hit me in my stomach. And I started bleeding when I went to the bathroom when I was 40 years old. And, you know, one of the things I learned as an old guy now is there's two people you never lie to. You never lie to your lawyer and you never lie to your doctor. So I was very open with my doctors. And anyways, because of health insurance, you know, basically running the medical industry, I didn't have my first colonoscopy till I was 48. Mm-hmm. And at that time got diagnosed with stage 2 rectal cancer, which was bad enough in itself. And kind of skipping forward ahead a little bit, at 54, I only had a foot and a half of my colon left, and the doctor did a colonoscopy, and unbeknownst to him and me at the time, I was kind of out of it. My colon burst during the exam.
My gosh.
Yes, and I was really in bad shape. Like, just as an example, right now I weigh, let's be generous and say 210. I was down to 150 pounds. I was skin and bones. And also in the process of that, not only, you know, surviving cancer, let's say, and then having my colon burst, there were a variety of things that happened with my surgeries. And I've had multiple surgeries, and it seemed like every time, Stacey, that I had surgery, something else bad happened. I wound up losing one of my kidneys. My ureter got pinched during one of the surgeries. Another thing that's kind of hard to listen to was my urethra got knit during one of my surgeries, and I was actually leaking urine out of my behind. I was really a mess. And as kind of the book alludes to, I used the title Reset because when my colon burst, my small intestines got tangled. And I actually have a full-time ostomy bag. Wow. And that was part of when my colon burst, they had to pull everything out. My small intestines got tangled and they wouldn't let me eat, because nothing was going into my bag. So for basically 6 months, I was on this liquid nourishment called TPN. had a pick line in my arm. My son would hook me up in the evening, and then my wife would unhook me before she went to work. And I basically sat at home for 3 or 4 months living like this and went down to about 150 pounds. And I think at the end of the day, and we can certainly discuss it today, I don't know how to explain it, Stacy, other than to say, I think with not eating and fasting, if you will, my body reset. And at 150 pounds, I realized, and maybe it's because my body was in survival mode. I realized as I started to get better, I didn't have the anxiety that I had anymore. And it was, I'm not a religious guy by any means, but it was almost a miracle. And so at 55, my colon burst at 54. At 55, 56, I started to get better. And finally, at 60 years old, I basically felt like I got my life.
Well, I'm glad that you got your life back, you know.
Yes, and I'm glad too.
Yeah. You know, that's an incredible story, you know, and I can only imagine the emotions, the frustration, the maybe, you know, anger of why me, you know, and just going through all, you know, probably fall into a depression at some point because, you know, when you go into anger usually leads to anxiety. Anxiety usually leads to depression, and you know it's just a very vicious cycle. You know, for you, what were some of the emotions you were going through, and how did you eventually overcome those emotions and those struggles that you went through?
Well, certainly, you know, and this really hit me. This was probably the biggest kind of thing for me when I was really sick. Was how lonely and that feeling of being alone.
Yeah.
And I can't understate that. As a matter of fact, Katie Couric, who we all know, her husband died of colon cancer. And I had read her book. She wrote a book a couple years ago. And her husband had said having cancer was the loneliest experience he ever went through. And that really had a lot of meaning to me. You know, when you're at that point of survival and all you can think about is yourself, you know, I couldn't worry about my wife. My kids were grown up, fortunately, or at least young adults, so they weren't at home. And you really get down to just it's you and your maker, I guess, you know. And it's funny you mentioned about anger, because as at 55, as I started to come out of this anxiety, I went back into therapy because it was funny. I felt, as I told my therapist, and my therapist was awesome. She was a older female. I felt like I had this superpower, Stacy. And it wasn't a physical thing as much as it was like, all of a sudden, I wasn't afraid anymore. And not that I was walking around kind of afraid of people, but I was afraid of my father, and I was ashamed for how I felt. And I had this superpower, I call it, where I wasn't afraid anymore. And I kind of said to myself, basically, if you want to F with me, let's go. And again, it wasn't so much of a physical thing. It was like, I'm just not afraid anymore. And so from that, and you had brought up about anger, after I started to get better, I really developed this anger attitude. I was angry at my doctors. I was angry at my wife. Although she was a great caretaker, that loneliness issue came up. I was like angry at everybody, and I felt like I lost 2 years of my life from when my colon burst. That was far, having my colon burst was far worse than having cancer. As a matter of fact, I was almost thrilled, Stacy, when they diagnosed me with cancer, because I had had my first panic attack at 19 or 20 years old. And finally, at 48 years old, so 28 years later, I was finally diagnosed with something that was physical.
Yeah.
Because when you have mental issues, you can't touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was almost thrilled when the doctor said, you have stage 3 cancer. For the first time in 28 years, I felt like, okay, we have something we can work on. Let's go. And it was amazing. When you get diagnosed with cancer, for some of your listeners who have had cancer or have cancer.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion, capital at risk.
All of a sudden, it's go time. I mean, the doctor's on your team, you get an oncologist, you get a radiologist, you know, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And you're like the man, you know, you're almost, you know, it was really kind of funny. And that's a little bit off topic, but when you're diagnosed with something like that, or you have a bad sickness or something, you're kind of initially popular. Everybody feels sorry for you. And you're getting all these emails from your friends and, you know, yeah. and sadly, that only lasts about 2 weeks. And then, you know, people go back to their lives, you know, and you get it. So you kind of have this, I'm super important, to now I'm just another guy with cancer out in the world trying to make it, you know.
Right.
And so so loneliness, anger, you know, certainly, you know, fear. Was a huge part of my life, and then, you know, developed into what I would call severe anxiety. I mean, I was having 10 to 20 panic attacks a day. I mean, it's almost miraculous that I didn't fail, either kill myself or turn into an alcoholic. I think part of it, Stacy, was, as I put in the book, you know, I didn't have the luxury to be able to fail. I had a family, you know, I had to go to work. I couldn't crawl into a ball and just lay there. You know, one of my jobs, as I have in the book, was I through kind of a fluke, I became the U.S. payroll manager at Nike.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an intense job. And when I took it, I was way over my head. And I remember literally driving to work, brought my kids off at school, and then I'd head to Nike headquarters, which is just outside of Portland. And it maybe about a mile away, and I'm not lying to you when I say this, about a mile away, I'd start dry heaving. And I just felt sick. And I'm having an attack, you know, and you have to, when you're in a big company, especially a company like Nike, and I was kind of visual as the U.S. payroll manager. You got to have your shit together, and you can't show any weakness.
Right.
If you do, you're dead. So I'd be walking up to, I'm literally walking up to the door of my building. I would grab that handle, and it was like my body switched. It was like, I still didn't feel good, but I just, like, my mind shifted, and it's like, Mark, knock your shit off and start to focus, you know. And I had, at the end of the day, you know, it was funny. I had 6 people when I initially got hired at Nike. And by the end of my 4 years, I had 18 people underneath me. So I had a large department. I had a lot of people I had to manage. It was stressful. And I was still, this was pre-cancer. So I was still in the throes of having anxiety and that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Somehow I was able to pound through it.
That is amazing. That is so amazing. I could understand when you say that you felt alone, because I wrote a book called Epilepsy, You're Not Alone. And for 15 years of my life, I did not drive because I couldn't. And until they got my seizures under control. And at that point, I was in my home most of the time. And I actually felt, even though I had people around me who I knew loved me and cared about me, I felt imprisoned in my own home. I felt very lonely. So I could relate to you when you say that. I can understand, you know, the loneliness you felt. And sometimes when we're in our own environment, we don't realize how many people in this world are going through similar situations and that can relate to you, you know. And that's why
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's why reaching out is so important.
Well, I was going to ask you, one of the things I learned, and I'm a real believer, and one of the reasons I'm doing this podcast, I went for years, and I was going to ask you if you shared your epilepsy with people or did you hide it? Because for me, and I'll let you answer in a minute, but for me, I tried to hide it. I was ashamed. Here I was, this man, a male, and I couldn't solve this problem. And I'm totally the opposite now. I felt ashamed when I went into therapy. They would ask me to describe myself, and invariably I would use the word wimp.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
And they would say, why are you a wimp? And I'm like, well, I'm a guy and I can't solve this problem. And it wasn't until I started to get better in my 50s that I started talking about it. And it was like this weight fell off my shoulders. Now, and so I want to ask you, did you hold it in, or did you, obviously you eventually shared it, but initially, did you feel ashamed in like, I'm the only one with this issue?
Oh, 100%. I hid it for many years until my adulthood. Yeah, and you know, I was in denial for a good portion of the time. I didn't want to accept that I had epilepsy, and I hid it for a very, very long time. When I became an adult, and especially when I couldn't drive for 15 years, I started writing as an outlet, and I started journaling, and I started, you know, writing in blogs and posting them. And that's when I started to share my story. And that's when people with similar situations started to reach out to me and thank me for sharing my story. And that's when I realized that it was important to share my story, because I was helping others and others were telling me their stories and what they did, and they were helping me. So that's when I started to realize that sharing your story is vital. Storytelling is vital for healing.
You know, and that's the thing, and I think it's a huge point that you make, is that, you know, especially when you're hiding it, you feel, again, that loneliness or all alone, and you don't realize that other people have this. As a matter of fact, it's very interesting now, because I used to see myself as, I wouldn't say a loser, but just not... you know, not in control of my life. And as you get older, and especially at 67 now, you know, I've been around the block a few times. You know, you learn to realize a lot of people are messed up. Yeah. And you know this, I don't know if you know this guy, his name is David Goggins. He's a health nut. And are you allowed to cuss on this thing? I don't want to.
You are. It's okay.
He said something to the effect like, you know, everybody treats you like you're fucked up, but they're more fucked up than you. And they rain down on you to help make them feel better. And he says, once you figure that out, then you can go toe to toe with them. And it's really true. You know, again, without being a bully or a jerk about it. You know, when you realize, especially, you know, again, at my age, you know, I was afraid of everybody and ashamed. And now I'm not. You know, again, and you know, most people are more messed up than you are. You know, as a matter of fact, it was interesting. At 35, I finally went to see a psychiatrist because I was seeing psychologists and they can't prescribe medicine. And while it's good to talk, my stuff, Stacy, was so severe. And nobody, my psychologist would never recommend medicine. Mm-hmm. And finally, I decided I'm done with this crap, you know, because I couldn't function and I needed help. I needed something to break the, you know, that constant attack. And so I was seeing this psychiatrist, and at the time I was working at Nike, and he shared with me once, Mark, Stacy, he said, you know, Mark, I see some VPs and stuff at Nike. And he goes, believe me, they are no better than you are, you know. And again, it was nice to hear, because, you know, you kind of feel like you're all alone out there.
Yeah, so true.
And so I think sharing is, you know, I would encourage people to seek people out or quit being afraid and talk about it.
Yes. Now, so many people go through attacks, and they go through, you know, they, you know, people, many people I speak with, you know, fear, anxiety, panic attacks, waking up in the middle of the night, feeling like their heart is pounding, that they feel like they're having a heart attack, or it happens just when they're walking out of nowhere. All of a sudden they start getting a panic attack in a store, and they start feeling isolated, and they feel like the world is against them. How did you overcome that? Because that's a very difficult thing to overcome. And there's so many people out there that want to know how. How do I overcome this?
Well, there were a number of things before I had, let's say, my reset moment, which was at 55. One of the things, and I think people can maybe relate to this, and it's kind of sad to say, but what I tried to do was to control the situation, my environment. Like when I got up in the morning, this was in my 30s and 40s, mm-hmm. I would almost start playing in my mind how my day would go.
Mm-hmm.
And like, especially like there were times, you know, I'd have to give a presentation or a speech at Nike, you know, I was at a manager level.
Yeah.
And you got to get up there. And God, I'd be freaking out, you know, and I kept saying to myself, Mark, just hang in there, you know, in 2 hours, it'll be over, you know. So to answer your question, it was about control. It was trying to control my environment as best I could. And I learned to say no, which I think is actually a good quality. You know, one of the things I fight with my wife with is the only person she says no to is me. You know, she's a pleaser. She's a pleaser where I'm kind of at 67. I'm kind of over that. You know, I don't want to be a jerk, but if there's something I don't want to do, I say I don't want to do.
Exactly.
So it was about control. So one of the things was controlling my environment. The other kind of two things that saved me was I was a runner. I always belonged to a gym and I always ran. And it was my way of kind of releasing my anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, the other thing, and I, you know, I'm Irish, so I probably had a propensity to turn into an alcoholic. The good news was my stomach was so sensitive, I couldn't even drink a lot. But I used alcohol as a way to kind of get through the moment. And I'll give you an example. This is how screwed up I was. After I got married, I'm originally from Chicago, and as I said in the book, after I graduated from college, I drove out to Portland. So all my family was back in Chicago, and so my wife had her family there. So it was always like, we're going over there for the holidays. So it would be September. I'm not kidding you. It would be September, and I would start thinking about Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
See, and one of the things, and this, I haven't explained this earlier, my dad, we had seven kids in our family, and mm-hmm. my dad and my mom sat at the heads of the table, and then I was, all the boys, there was three boys and four girls, so the boys sat on one side and the girls sat on the other, so I was at my father's left hand, where he could hit, and he did 90% of his disciplining at the dinner table, to the point where I really almost developed this phobia about eating. I didn't, you know, there was a time I didn't eat in a restaurant for like 2 years, because after I ate, I had to get up from the table and move.
Wow.
And so I, you know, coming up to a place like Thanksgiving, my goal was, and I'd be freaking out. You know, I'd be asking my wife when we're going to leave as we're driving over to her folks' house. And her dad was a whiskey drinker. And I wasn't a big, like, beer drinker, because beer's foamy and it fills you up fast. And then yeah. I would have this feeling of nausea. So I would drink whiskey as well. And I would have one or two drinks. I wouldn't get sloppy, but I would have one or two drinks, and that would calm my nerves. And then the other thing was, again, to kind of manage the situation, I was a talker. And I had one of the things, I think it was a gift and it was a weapon as well, was I feel like, without patting myself on the back, I feel like I have a pretty good sense of humor.
Right.
And so kind of Don Rickles-like, where, you know, Don Rickles, he kind of pokes at people.
Yeah.
And so that was my way of controlling the environment, was start kind of picking on somebody, not being vicious.
Yeah.
You know, but just picking on them a little bit to where I felt I was in charge. And once I was in charge and I had a drink or two under my belt, I could relax. So a lot of it was exercise and being in therapy.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
With a little bit of alcohol. and you know, I'm being honest when I say this, you know, and I'm so grateful that I didn't turn into an alcoholic. You know, the other thing that was really interesting, and I understand what, when I was in the Air Force, I had a top secret clearance, believe it or not. I was a guy who got straight D's in high school, foreign language. And when I went in the Air Force, I qualified for the language school in Monterey, California. And I was chosen to learn Russian. And I lost my train of thought here. Where was I going?
So you were talking about how you got the D's in school, but then when you got to military school, you had a special clearance, and that brought you to learning Russian. Oh.
Yeah. But, you know, that was the other big thing, too, was, you know, I was on flight status. You know, we flew in the back of a plane and we flew off of Russia. And so that created a lot of anxiety for me as well, because when I came home from my sister's wedding, and that's when I had my panic attack, I went back to Okinawa, which is where I was stationed. And I was so sick, I couldn't fly. I was skin and bones. My anxiety was just running rampant. And it was very hard for me to deal with. And again, trying, not knowing, when I went back home, that's when I had my first panic attack. And so I didn't know what was happening to me. Sadly, I was unsophisticated. You know, social anxiety wasn't the buzzword like it is now. You know, surprising too. Oh, I was going to say, I remember now. So when I was stationed in Omaha, when I came back, we went over to some buddies of my house that were in the Air Force. And technically, we weren't allowed to be doing drugs. And we went over to their house one time, and they were making this big pot of spaghetti. And a couple of the guys had some joints. And so we smoked, and I got high. And it was kind of the first or second time I ever got high in my life. And it was funny, because I could eat when I was high. And because I that's where I was going with this, because I had a top secret clearance, if I got caught smoking, you know, you'd probably lose your clearance, potentially get kicked out of the service. And so even when I was in college, and, you know, by that time, you know, everybody had pot.
Yeah.
I never latched on to that. And I don't know why. It probably would have helped me a lot more, because I believe pot is much more healthy for you than alcohol is.
It is.
And so I, you know, and I kind of analyzed that in my book, that I was kind of surprised that I didn't grab onto that. You know, it's kind of like, I suppose, and thank God I was not, you know, a drug guy. You know, people start taking drugs, it makes them feel good, and then they can't stop. You know, thankfully, I wasn't that guy.
I think, you know, I commend you, because you've gone through a lot. And when you had the panic attacks, and then you went through the fears in life, when fear had, you know, stepped at your door, and you opened up and you saw that black shadow and he was waiting for you. How did you overcome fear? You know, some people say you face your fears. Some people, you know, you just have to push through it. You know, for you, all these things that you went through and fear approached you, how did you fight fear and overcome fear?
Well, I didn't fight it well. I'll give you an example, and I knew deep down, you're absolutely right. I knew deep down, and I'm a believer, you have to face your fears. And my father, when I was in college, my father actually ran away from home, and it's in the book. I won't get into it, but we didn't know where my father was for 2 or 3 years. And so we found him in Texas, and he was working for a Gulf Oil. Yeah, I don't know how old you are if you remember Gulf.
I remember.
Okay, Chevron bought them out, and he got transferred to Seattle. And I was living in Portland. And first of all, that scared the hell out of me, because the closer my dad was to me, the more anxiety I had. But I knew I had to confront him. And so I drove up to Seattle, and I gagged the whole way there. And, you know, I didn't eat that morning. And then I got to my dad's house. I was scared shitless. We started drinking, which was kind of typical of the Doherty's. I got really effed up. I threw up. I'm sure when I drove home that next day, I was still drunk. Right. But I had gotten sick, and I drove home. And ironically, it took me about a week to kind of get over both the emotional part and then the physical part with getting sick. And yeah, kind of slowly but surely, I started to feel a little bit better. And yeah, I'm a big believer now in confronting your fears. And so that was one of the things that I think helped me get through it. And you know, the other thing, Stacy, and I don't want to downplay this, I was, and this sounds weird, I felt very fortunate having anxiety rather than depression. Right. And of course, there were times when I wouldn't say I was clinically depressed, but I was just getting my ass kicked when my colon burst, because every time I had surgery, something else happened. But I was grateful for anxiety in that I was overly up rather than down.
Right.
And again, because I had it so long, I could manage it. And then I will say too, I feel like, again, I have a good sense of humor, and I made a lot of jokes, like with my doctors and with people. It kind of helped me get through it. And you know, yeah, I'll give you a great example. You know, my asshole is sewn shut. There's no anus. They took everything out.
Yeah.
And I'm leaking. You know, I had the operation. I'm wearing a diaper every day because I'm leaking, and we can't. The doctor says it's coming out of my behind, but the doctor says, oh, it's just drainage from the surgery. Well, one day I'm shaving and I feel this liquid running down my back of my leg. And so I went in to see him, and he goes, how you doing, Mark? And I go, well, you know, doc, I can't take a shit out of my asshole, but I can take a piss. And he looked at me. He looked at me and I go, Doc, it's okay. You can laugh. Because, you know, when you're that sick, they don't know if you're making a joke or not. And if they laugh, you know, you go, hey, Doc, what the hell are you laughing for? So I think my sense of humor really helped me personally, you know, kind of get through those tough times.
Having a good sense of humor is really important because it's a mindset. You're looking at a horrific situation and you're making a joke out of it. You know, like, whereas if you look at it seriously and you take it to heart and you really analyze the situation and you think of, oh, you analyze it and what if this and now this and da da da. You know, 70% of illnesses are caused by stress alone, but laughter is the best medicine. And if you could take a situation and you could try to turn it into a funny situation, and it takes some of that pressure off, you know that you have to deal with it, but you're looking at it from a lighter perspective because you're being comical. You're just trying, you know, you're just taking life as it comes and you're just, you know, doing the best you can day by day.
You know, I think, you know, and that kind of leads to one of the things that I think is really important about people like me and you and other people that have had this. You know, it really, to be successful during these times, you have to learn to be resilient. And I think that's an underestimated word. You know, as a matter of fact, it's kind of, it was interesting, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, Jensen Huang, I think is how you say his last name. He's the CEO of NVIDIA.
Yeah.
And he started the company and he was talking to students from Stanford. And he said, and this was really interesting, he said, I don't think you can be successful as a person unless you've gone through pain and suffering. And it was funny, years ago, after I was starting to get better, my sister's pretty religious. And mm-hmm. she said, Mark, you don't know how lucky you are that you went through all this, your pain and suffering. And I said, Debbie, you got to be out of your mind. There was nothing good about that. And at the time, that's what I believe.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I'm qualified to say I'm successful, it was because I was resilient. I wouldn't give up. And sadly, a lot of that was driven by fear from my father mostly, and fear, and then of course, fear of failure. Mm-hmm. And as I tell people, Stacy, fear can be a great motivator, but mm-hmm. it can't last forever. It will kill you. And I think what I went through probably would have killed most people. And I'm grateful that I was 48. I weighed 185 pounds when I found out I was sick. I was a runner. I could run 5-6 miles, no problem. Yeah. I wasn't a smoker. I wasn't a heavy drinker. So the odds were in my favor. And I often think if I got cancer again now, how would I deal with it? And this may sound weird. I don't know if I could go through that intensity again. It was kind of a once in a lifetime thing. And especially at 67, Stacy, you know, it's like, okay, what haven't I done? You know, I live in Mexico. I have kids. I'm married. You know, we have a cabin in Oregon. For a guy who had to fight his way into life, basically, self-made person, you know, I did okay. I think my biggest regret, and this kind of hit me, and I put it toward the end of the book, Reset. I think my biggest regret was how much time I spent being afraid and having anxiety, and nothing ever really happened.
Right.
You know, and that's the point of having anxiety, is you worry about stuff that will probably never happen.
Exactly.
I was so afraid, Stacy, of throwing up in public. And of all the anxiety attacks I had over the years, I think I threw up once, and it wasn't even in public. yet I had all this fear. And now that I've come to the other side, I look at it like, in essence, Mark, why did you waste so much time? But it was something, it was in me. It was deep inside me because it started when I was a kid. I couldn't figure out how to deal with
it. Yeah.
And I think it's really important, Stacey. You know, it's one thing to have anxiety and fear when you're a kid because you don't know what, you know, I was born in 1956. You know, it's like nobody knew what that stuff was. I didn't know what it was, you know. And now it's like, you know, if you have anxiety, if any of your listeners have anxiety or emotional issues, go get help. I mean, quit fighting it. You know, there's help out there. There's medication. There's good therapists. You know, if it's not working for you with one person, go find somebody else. You know, you have to take your, as you probably did, I would imagine, you got to take your health and your personal being into your own hands. If you're going to wait for somebody to do it, good luck.
Right. Because
they ain't come. Nobody's going to knock on your door and say, hey, I can fix you. If you don't do it yourself, it ain't going to happen.
That's so true. Now, is there something that you do on a daily basis? Do you have like some type of regimen that you do that helps you continue to stay on this great mindset and continue to go through life with resilience and positive thinking?
Yes. One of the things I do every morning, I don't know if you know the fella Wim Hof, they call him the Iceman. He's this guy who does ice plunges, and he's big on breathing. So as soon as I get up, I go, we have a small casita attached to our property. I go over to the casita and he's got like a 15 minute breathing thing on YouTube. So I do that. And then the other big thing that keeps me level, well, kind of two things. And then I always do some kind of exercise every day. I either walk or I belong to the gym here in La Paz. So I walk to the gym, I do my lifting, I walk back. For me, it's really important to stay healthy. You know, it's you've heard that saying, maybe health is wealth.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, it really frustrates me. And I was kind of an asshole for a while about it. I would see, especially like men, I'd see these guys who get big and fat, big beer bellies and stuff.
Right.
And then they would have an issue. They would have a heart attack or they got type 2 diabetes or something. And then they changed their life. And kind of my thing was, why does it take a crisis for you to get your act together?
Right.
We have a guy here that lives in La Paz. He's an attorney. He was an international attorney. Great guy. He just retired maybe a year ago. He's like 74, 75. And he wasn't necessarily overweight per se, but he's a big guy. He didn't exercise. Well, he had two strokes while he was here. Now he's okay, but his life kind of came to a screeching halt. But I mean, like, okay, like he comes over to the pool now and he walks in the water. You know, he can't, like me, I can go out to the beach and walk for 45 minutes, you know.
Right.
If he does 15 minutes, he's thrilled, you know. And I think to myself, it's like, why did you not take care of yourself? It's like you're 75, 76 now. You worked your whole life and now you kind of can't do the things you want.
Yeah.
And I belong to the Colon Cancer Alliance. It was funny when I had colon cancer, I didn't even know about the colon cancer. So I became a buddy. I became a buddy after I got better. So I would talk to people that were currently sick. And I would tell them, I said, you know, you got to pound through this and then you got to get yourself healthy. And I would just, I wasn't afraid to tell them what I thought, you know, and I felt, you know, my personality, I'm kind of a straight shooter. As a matter of fact, I probably talk first and then think, God, was that inappropriate? You know, because it's like, It's like I told my therapist once, Stacy, it was when I was going through that anger thing. And I said, you know, her name was Claudette. I go, you know, Claudette, I like being an asshole. And she goes, Mark, it's okay to be an asshole. You just can't be one all the time. And I go, fair enough. Fair enough.
That's good advice.
Fair enough.
Now, so, if you had to take everything that we've learned today and you had to give some really good takeaways, like what are some things you'd like to emphasize?
I would emphasize if you have the issues I have, like fear and anxiety and they're out of control, the first thing I would say is get into therapy. Get into therapy and find a good therapist. If your anxiety is super intense, it's like one thing to be maybe a little bit abnormally anxious. Like, let's say, you know, surprisingly, I was very relaxed when we started this, but I, you know, I've done a couple other podcasts. Now, remember, I was kind of like antsy waiting for the Zoom meeting to come up, you know, that's kind of normal anxiety. But if your anxiety is intense, like mine was, see a psychiatrist and get medicine, because what you have to do, and this is really important, Stacy, is you have to break that cycle. And it sometimes takes medication. You know, certainly talking gets you eventually to where you need to be, but you gotta break that cycle. The other thing too, and this is very hard, you have to get over the shame of feeling different. Yeah. It's very hard, and it took me a long time as a recovering anxiety guy. It's easy to say now, and to be like 20 years ago, I wouldn't be here talking to you. I would be so ashamed. Right. And now I feel like, you know, I don't give a shit. If people listening to this think I'm a whack job, hey, that's okay. You know, I'm not here to be everybody's buddy. But you know, get over that shame. And then the other thing, probably the final thing I would say is, you know, you have to face your fear. I think if you, and it's very difficult, but if you don't do it, I don't think you can ever truly get better. You know, whether it's anxiety, fear of failure, whatever it is that's causing your life to be on hold. You have to pound through it. And it's difficult. It's not easy. I understand it. But, if you truly, and you have to admit you have a problem. A lot of people, they're like, no, I'm fine. No, I mean, I see people all the time as an anxiety expert. I see people all the time, Stacy, that I know suffer from anxiety. And I'll ask them, I'll go, I'm friends with them, and I'll go, you know, do you suffer like from anxiety, you know? And they're like, oh, no, I'm fine. And you can just see them. They're agitated. And they're lying. Ultimately, they're lying to themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, I see it. And again, I'm out there. I got no fear. That doesn't mean I don't get fearful sometimes or anxious sometimes.
Right.
But in general, I'm over it. And I'm grateful. You know, at 60, kind of the final thing here, I don't know how much time we got left. It was a gift. My dad, I was between jobs. I quit my job at 60 and I was home. And my sister flew up. She lived in Iowa. She flew up to Seattle to take care of my father. And I didn't know she was even up there. And she called me and she said, Dad fell out of bed. She said, can you come up and help me? And I said, well, you're lucky, Debbie. I said, I actually am not working now. So I drove up. I didn't gag once when I went up there. And I knocked on the door. And I'm 6 foot. I knocked on the door. My dad's probably was like 5'9". And I walk in there. And he's sitting on the couch. And he's just this guy. And I felt like Andre the Giant when I walked in there. And I felt like I could pick him up and throw him through the window. I felt that like strong and confidence. Anyways, that night, my dad had dementia. I don't even know that he knew who I was when I walked in. So I hadn't seen him in like 6 years.
Wow.
And that night, my sister made dinner. I spent the night, and my brother lived in the same complex. I spent the night with my brother. And my dad stood up and he said, I don't know where he got this. And I was so lucky. He stood up and he said, Mark, I know we've had a bad relationship. And he said, it was my fault. And I'm sorry. And I never, ever heard my dad say he was sorry to anybody. And that, my eyes welled up. I didn't cry. I wasn't like, but yeah. It was very emotional. And I went home and I walked in and my wife was in the kitchen and I went and gave Sally a hug. And I said, Sally, it's over. I go, he can't hurt me anymore. And at 60 years old, Stacy, I got my life back. And I was so great. I was so grateful. And I know there's millions of people who have issues with an ex-spouse or a parent or something, and they never get those words, and it haunts them their whole life. And I felt so grateful. As a matter of fact, my father wound up living to 95 or 96. He died like 2 months ago. I was here in La Paz, and I didn't hate my father. But I didn't go to the, I didn't fly home for the funeral. But I was glad my wife, Sally, was home visiting our kids and our grandkids. So my son and his family and Sally went up to Seattle for the funeral. And I was glad that somebody represented me. And if I had been home, I would have gone. I didn't hate him, but there was no, I hated him and feared him at one time. But I got over that. And it was just, sadly, there was no love there. But I got my life back at 60 and I feel very fortunate. And so here I am.
I am very proud of you. You've come a long way.
Thank you.
You've come so far, more than most people. And I really commend you. And I think some of the advice you gave today was tremendous. And I'd like to know more, like, where can people find your books, first of all, where they can learn more about Reset and more about your life? And you've also written the other book. Where can people find these books?
I wrote them as ebooks. You know, I think it was too expensive to have it as a hardcover. So they're ebooks, they're on Kindle. And you can look up either Reset by Mark Doherty, or my other one is I'm a Genius, Just Ask Me. And it was about, I made a ton of money trading stocks, options actually, in 2020. And then I made like 1.2 million. And then I wound up losing about half of it. So I wrote the book as kind of a way to show the common man that they could be rich too. Just don't be a bonehead like me and lose out. they're both on Kindle. And, you know, I have my email addresses in both books, and I'm happy to be contacted by people. That's actually how I kind of got into the podcast. I had asked a friend because, you know, my books, like, you know, when you go and you look for like a psychology book, you know, I'm on page like 400. I'm like way over here. And I go, how do I get my book up to the front? They go, you got to have readers. And she goes, what, have you tried doing a podcast? And I thought, you know, I, as you could tell, I'm a talker, especially now. I got no fear. If you ask me a question, I'm off to the races. So I kind of got into these podcasts and I do enjoy them. And I hope it's good for me. It's good to talk about my shit. It's also good to share it. You know, especially as an older man, I think it's important that men understand it's okay to be in therapy. It's okay to say you have a problem. You know,
right.
Nobody's a rock. You know, everybody has an issue. Try to be a good human being. You know, I work on it every day. You know, try to just be a better person. That doesn't mean I don't have flaws. I'm no superstar. I don't have any awesome gifts or anything. I just kind of work it and pound through it.
Now, do you provide any services or anything? Do you coach people or talk to people, or Do you have any services?
No, I don't. It's funny you mentioned that. I took Dave Ramsey's, he's a financial guy, and he has a financial coaching thing. And I took it when I was here in Mexico. It cost me about $1,800. And, you know, I got my diploma from him. But the problem here in Mexico, and I don't have a web page and stuff. The problem in Mexico, most of the people that live here have more money than I do. So I'm probably not going to coach them. And I didn't really sell myself, but I love talking about finance. I like to invest. I've had some good success lately. I've not been overly successful. You know, the market ebbs and flows if you do anything like that. But, my second book is about finance, and there's a lot of, I think, lessons in there, especially for young people. I think it's really important that people save. You know,
right.
I didn't start because of when I was working. I didn't start my 401k until I was 40 years old, and I went to Nike. You know, I worked for small business. I was the controller of small businesses, and back in the 80s and 90s, Stacy, 401ks were just kind of coming out. And if you don't work for a big company, if you don't work for an Intel or a Nike or someplace, you know, small businesses couldn't even afford to do 401ks. You were trying to keep the doors open.
Yeah.
And so I was 40 when I started. So I was a good 10 to 15 years behind the curveball. And it was funny when my daughter actually works at Nike, and she's been there for quite some time. And she said, Dad, it's time for me to set up my 401k. And she goes, you know, I want to go like super conservative and da, 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 da. And I go, Kelsey, absolutely not. I put her in like the most aggressive. I go, Kelsey, you're 25 years old. You know, you got 40 more years. You want your money to grow. Quit worrying about, you know, you want the market to go down while you're saving, you know, buy low, sell high. So, you know, again, it's all perceptive. So, you know, and I'm a big anti-debt guy. You know, I have no debt in my life. I don't think, you know, somebody asked me one time, Stacy, they go, how much money do I need to retire? I said, it really depends on how much debt you have. I said, if you don't have any debt, and like, I'm 67 now, what do I need? You know,
right.
You go to the Nike employee store and I buy some Nike shirts and some golf shoes. You know, I don't need anything anymore.
Right.
You know? So it's surprising how little, if you've done your homework up to the point of retirement, how little you really need, you know.
Exactly.
And so that's really what the second book's. But to answer your question, I'm not nobody wants to be coached by, I can't even coach my own kids. I used to do my daughter's taxes, and every year she owed money and I'd get on her shit. She doesn't have me do her taxes anymore. Which is probably good.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny.
So, anyways.
Now, where can people find you on the internet if they want to contact you?
Well, I'm on Facebook. You know, I'm on Instagram. And I can send you, I don't know how you, you know, when this broadcast happens, you know, a lot of times I've done a few and they kind of put all this stuff. But I'm in Instagram under Mark. /C for Christopher /Doherty. And then I actually joined Facebook. You know, it's kind of funny. I joined Facebook to try and sell my books. And so initially with Reset, I joined all these like mental health, panic attacks, men with issues. So I joined all these things and I posted a picture of my book and said, you know, you should read this. I think it would help you. I got kicked off of all of them because you can't sell anything on them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, so what? So why am I here? anyways, I am. And then what I do is like when you tell me the podcast is available, I'll download it and I'll post it to my Instagram and Facebook page. And then, you know, I got a bunch of followers that, you know, I click on, you know, I know like five of them personally, you know, But you know how you find all these friends. So I just click on them because you never know, you know. And then how I found you was on matchmakers.com. And, you know, I read your bio on, and as I've done with others, and I thought, I think I'd be a good guest. Plus, I think there's credibility, and I don't want to, again, sound like I'm so awesome. But I think it's good for men to get on these types of shows and share their issues.
Yes.
Men, you know, women, a lot of these kind of podcasts like you have, and I've listened to others, it's probably when there's mental health issues talking or about health, it's probably 80% women as the guest. And I think it's, and I really appreciate you having me on here as a male. And again, being comfortable now in my own skin when I wasn't for so many years. I know there are men out there. I mean, everybody has issues.
There are tens and thousands and millions of men that are out there, but we were brought up a certain way in certain generations, and that's the problem.
Well, but especially for, you know, I was born in the 50s, you know, like my dad, he used to chastise me. He'd be like, why do you go to see a therapist? And I would say, you know, Dad, because I got a problem and I can't solve it. Now, you know, get off my back, you know.
Yeah.
Because I got better, you know, so.
Well, you are amazing. And I'm so glad that you came onto this show. And I thank you so much. And I hope you'll be on again. I hope we can talk more and go deeper and delve deeper into a lot of these emotions and how you overcame them so we could teach others. But Mark, thank you so much for being on this show. You have been truly an amazing guest. You've journeyed through so much and you've overcome so many obstacles. You rose above the chaos and you were able to, you know, accomplish your dreams and make them a reality. So I commend you for all the things that you've gone through, overcame, and how you keep going and how now you're helping others through your story. So thank you so much for being on the show.
It was my pleasure. And again, if your listeners want to go a little deeper, it's pretty interesting to read my book, Reset. I think they'll find it. It's not an easy read, but there's a happy ending. So, and again, thank you so much, Stacey. It was my pleasure. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk.
Oh, you're very welcome. You have a great day.
You as well. Thank you.